Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent, that ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 46. Gwent has announced the next big competitive event, a tournament at Gamescom. Greyboxer and I discussed this in detail, as well as another event, the Gwentleman's Invitational Summer League. Later, we talk about our overlord Dagon and what makes him such a strong leader. All this, and a bit more spy talk, on this episode of Commander's Horn. Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of Commander's Horn, a weekly Gwent podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I'm joined today by the Midnight Viking, or Temerian, or whatever you're calling yourself these days, Greyboxer. You've been successful with some late-night laddering, no matter what you're calling yourself. Is that right?
Yeah, it's really the only way I know how to do it. I gotta be the Midnight Temerian when I'm in North America, and, you know, I'm stuck, you know, riding a desk all day long. So when I play, it's very late at night in Europe, and it's still pretty late night here. So I kick back with a fine brew and see what I can do on the ladder. And it's been pretty successful this week. You might say I've been kind of lucky, since I did play a lot of a Hyrule Dijkstra dance party deck and picked up about 1,000 MMR in 40 games, and I'm just about 4K. Ran into a bit of a wall at about 4K MMR with this Shadow Ways 27-card Northern Realms deck, basically because it's so autopilot. As long as you get the mulligans right, you're going to win. It's just, you know, it's very beatable by the Ethna control decks out there, like, quite easily. And some of these Dagon decks have been rearing their ugly heads. So, yeah, it's been fun, and efficiency is key when you're limited on time. So I'm finally catching up to you, McBeard.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to talk about this, I think, because we have a lot of people that listen that, you know, aren't necessarily, you know, all grandmasters for sure. So, you know, I've been calling it the 4K float. So I got to 4K last week, and I'm still just cresting over I'm almost at 41, but it's been kind of bouncy. Like, I try to experiment with some stuff, and I've been playing some weird stuff. You know, I've been known for playing a Henseld armor deck that has been, you know, it's had variable success, because you really do kind of hit a wall at 4K. Like, the game really slows down. And I think that, you know, in the previous MMR changes, CD Projekt Red wanted there to be a kind of a clamping effect. I think that's a word that a lot of people have been using. And I think it was kind of, at first it appeared they wanted that clamping effect to start at rank 15, but it still feels fairly significant. A lot of people, you know, it's an achievement to get rank 19. Don't let anybody tell you any different, but it does slow down. It definitely gets harder to win around 4K, because it's just a traffic jam. It's a huge bottleneck. When you win, you go up so many positions on the leaderboard, and when you lose, you drop a bunch as well, just because it's so dense. So when you get up there, it does change, and there's still, like, you know, a sparse amount of grandmasters out there. So, but it's good. It's good to be pushing and trying to. I'm trying to get that breakthrough day. And I think the Ethna deck is one of my favorites right now. Had a really good run today with it. Only lost two games, I think, overall. And we're almost there. We're almost at that rank 20. Maybe tomorrow. We'll see. We'll see.
I caught your final game with that deck today, and it's hilarious. You played Bork a little bit early to kind of bamboozle your extra Scorch, and it was just mega. You got so much value out of your Scorches. I think you ran, would you have three in the final round on top of Bork?
Yeah, I mean, the way that Ethna's lists are looking these days, and the way that I built mine, and it's like a pretty common, I'll put the list in the show notes, but it runs a package of spells that I've always tried to make work, and that's Marching Orders, Nature's Gift, and Alzir's Double Cross to make for a really thin deck and have Ethna pull like some really great stuff. But also the Scorch, which tends to be what you do in round three with Ethna. You end up just playing like a third Scorch, because it also runs a standard Scorch, and Shiru that turns another card into a Scorch, and Villain Trenton Mirth, which also Scorches. So ideally in round three, you just have a bunch of gold strength and you have like four Scorches. Like, that's, you know, it feels so powerful when it all lines up, and it's not uncommon for it to do that. But yeah, I really like that list a lot. I was trying to make that spell package work, and it's very close to Vaish's list from the Gwentleman's Open back from a couple weeks ago. Although I tend to run just a couple of different bronzes, but it felt really good.
Yeah, it's been a pretty solid week of Gwent for the both of us.
Yeah, for sure. This episode of Commander's Horn is recorded in the Commander's Horn studio. You can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. Follow us on Twitter at Commander's Horn for all updates on the show. Feel free to email us your feedback to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com.
And this episode of Commander's Horn is brought to you by our new sponsor, Dagon Energy Drinks. Unleash the fog. Just kidding. Commander's Horn is actually supported by our commandos, our patrons at patreon.com/commandershorn. Your support helps keep the lights on and keeps us ad-free. Your support, even if it's a dollar, even if it's just for 1 month, it all helps keep us doing what we're doing, which is making the best Gwent content we can.
We really appreciate the support, everybody, and we have a great show. We have a lot of great news to talk about. Huge news, I would say. Woo! Maybe the biggest news yet. Two massive events are on the horizon. And, you know, with the meta already being, I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I find that the meta, even though, and we're going to talk about this meta, the meta snapshot that Gwendolyn has presented to us. We're going to talk about that. But I think that even in this meta where Dagon is looking like he is our god, you know, he is a god, but the god, the Gwent god. Even in the meta where he is our overlord, it has been the most exciting couple of weeks of Gwent. I've never had more fun playing than I've been playing now. And now with these events coming up, it is an unparalleled level of excitement because it's getting to be big time. It's only a matter of weeks until things really start to heat up. And this is still open beta. And I don't feel any burnout. And I have, you know, the people that we've been talking to, we don't sense burnout. We feel like it's only just getting more exciting. And two great events coming up, CD Projekt Red hosting one and the Gwendolyn hosting one. Let's talk about the news right after this break. We'll talk about all the big events coming up on Gwent, in Gwent.
For Gwent and by
Gwent. For Gwent and under it. And in Gwent.
Within and underlying.
All right. My friends, our top story. It's been a long time. Well, it feels like it's been a long time. It hasn't been that long. Relatively, but it feels like it's been a long time since CD Projekt Red has graced us with some official news about the future of Gwent Esports, and we are on the next chapter. Gwent is going to be present at Gamescom, surprising no one, but the fact that their presence is going to be a Gamescom tournament is very exciting. The news just came out yesterday. You're listening to this on Wednesday. Yesterday, the news broke that Gwent will be at Gamescom for a tournament. Details are as follows. As of August 1st at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time / 4 p.m. Central European Summertime, the top 7 ranked players will be cut off and told that they're going to Cologne should they be able to attend. And then there's one wild card that will be determined at the Gamescom event itself. Gray Boxer, how do you feel about this news as it just hit us?
Oh, this is great. This is what we wanted to see, right? This is the great big picture of Gwent Esports taking shape right in front of us, and it's happening at what really was a pivotal time last year for Gwent as well at Gamescom. You know, got to reveal one of the most recent builds and got to play test hands on and everything. And so now we've evolved, right? We're in the position where the beta has been going on for 8 months now. Open beta has been here for, at the time that Gamescom happens, what, 3 months already? Almost four?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, it's really exciting because the players who have really put in the time and the players who have, you know, worked on not only countering the meta but also developing it are going to be the 7 top-ranked players. I mean, with the way ranking is working right now and the way it's going to be a dog pile to get onto the top 7. I'm really excited to see the level of talent we're going to have at this tournament.
It's going to be a bloodbath, I think. It's going to be absolutely insane. And I feel like the last time it has been this exciting, like I talked about at the end of closed beta, I had more fun just refreshing the leaderboard. I feel like I could have casted just the leaderboard, just watching number one switch around. And you know, and that was just about the borders and the frames. And like that was, you know, that was Challenger hadn't even happened yet at that point, or it had happened. Had it happened?
Yeah. Yeah, that was.
Challenger had just happened. Challenger had just happened because it was the end of the closed beta, right? When they opened it up, they actually opened the closed beta. Kind of, it was like a pre-open beta on the weekend of Challenger, and then closed beta was like announced like the next couple days that it was going to be finished and we're going to go into public beta. But man, that was so exciting at the time, and it was right on the heels of Gwent Challenger. And now this isn't quite Challenger. The prize pool, only 25K, only 25K.
What? Only.
Only 25K. But it's, you know, it's still really, really exciting. You know, it's just, you know, it's one more step in the direction of, you know, an investment in the community, an investment in viewership for, you know, esports in general. And the community is the one that ultimately decides if Gwent is going to be an esport that is going to have, you know, the ability to draw that interest and to draw the talent and the players. And we've already seen a lot of star power move over. You know, we've seen a lot of, you know, we've seen Evil Geniuses pick up huge players like Life Coach. We've seen Life Coach even approach the game, period. The fact that he's involved to the level that he's involved, he's in China right now doing Gwent business right this minute with Super JJ. And, you know, it's just
Complexity too. Don't forget, Complexity has just opened up its Gwent arm.
Yes, that's news that, you know, we may have actually skipped over that last week, but Complexity along with Merchant and Super JJ, and, you know, Noxious is a part of Complexity as well. The big announcement involved JJ and Merchant, but we know Noxious is part of that as well. And maybe not the first steps, but these are big steps, I think. And the final piece of news that I am proud to announce, that the casters for this event will be none other than Mega Mogwai, Merchant, the aforementioned Merchant, and myself. I have been invited back to cast the event, and it proves without a doubt that the only way you can be a caster in this event is to have your screen name start with an M.
Yeah. It's they're looking for another one that begins with an M as well. And off the top of my head, I can't think of anybody who begins with an M.
Mayboxer.
maybe Boxer. No.
Maybe Boxer.
Midnight Viking.
Yeah, Midnight Viking. Hey,
No, but I like to see that. I like to see that they've recognized and maybe taken some constructive feedback about the casting of the Challenger, where you guys were worked to death on that stage, and you guys really pulled through. But you could tell it was quite a lot, and maybe the matches went a lot longer than anybody ever expected. But you guys were up there soldiering on, and so adding the third guy on there, and it couldn't happen to a better guy. Shout out to Merchant. And to have him either be in their color commentary or relieving one of you guys to give you breaks. I mean, it's all trending up, and it's really great. And it's all happening at Gamescom next month.
Yeah, and you talked about this being kind of coming full circle for a lot of people. I was talking to Ruben today, actually, because I do some friendly scrims with some of the players in the community. I actually played against Ruben today. We were talking about how Gamescom is really important to him, because that's the day that he went to Gamescom in Cologne, Germany, as it is this year as well, and as it always is. And he actually went to the Gwent booth and saw Gwent for the first time at Gamescom, and it's now been a year, and it was just kind of, we were reflecting on that, how so much has happened, you know, in the last year. And when Gamescom happened before, we hadn't even started the podcast yet. I haven't even recorded the first episode. The first episode was on the heels of PAX East, I believe, when they first unveiled like premiums for Arrakis Behemoth, like really old school stuff. And they were talking about how they were working on single player stuff and, you know, really, really conceptual stuff. But at Gamescom, they had a playable build. A lot of people got to experience Gwent, have it touch their lives for the first time. And, you know, it's been a wild year. I remember watching King Blacktooth cover. He did some commentary over some of the games that they previewed. And, you know, the amount of content that was able to be created and worked with was so sparse compared to the mountain of content that there is now, that, you know, the game has evolved so, so much. And I feel like there's so much to talk about, just kind of a year in review. You could do a whole podcast on a year in review in Gwent generally. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
There'd be no. It'd be a 4-hour episode. Easy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. But the information stands, $25,000 prize pool for the top 7 ranked players, and then a wild card that will be determined at the event. If you can go to Gamescom, if you're going there anyway, you're traveling there yourself, you're going, you already have a ticket, you're already planning on being there, you can actually compete in a preliminary and get that extra spot and be part of this Gwent Gamescom specific tournament. And, you know, that is going to be a real wild card player because we can maybe expect some familiar faces to be part of these top seven ranked players, because once the fire is lit under the behinds of these players, I imagine, like I said, it's going to be a blood path, dog pile, whatever term you want to use. But I think that the cream will rise to the top. They have a fair amount of days. I mean, let's see. This was announced 25th of July. So they have
a week.
I mean, it's not a lot of time, but, you know, CD Projekt Red is basing, you know, they're basing this event off of an event that they are not running. This is Gamescom specifically. So on the calendar, Gamescom always happening at this time. Gwent, you know, it's kind of ground zero Gwent. We just talked about how it was, you know, it's very much Gwent's kind of, you know, first foray. A lot of people experience Gwent for the first time. So it makes sense for it to be at Gamescom. It's great that it's at Gamescom. It's, you know, a comparatively small event to Challenger, but it's still an event that's going to draw a huge crowd. I think a lot of people are going to watch it. I hope so. And I am flying to, I'm not actually going to the event. We are flying to Poland, actually. We'll be casting offsite, but it is still very much an event for me. Anytime I get to go to CD Projekt Red and go to visit Warsaw, it's awesome. And and then it's funny because I'm actually going to a wedding in Cologne immediately afterwards. So I'm going to Cologne anyway, like right after Gamescom, but I'm not going to be in Cologne for Gamescom. It's funny how that works. And you're going to Cologne before Gamescom, right? You're going for your honeymoon.
At this time next week, I'll be in Cologne. And we'll be there as tourists. We'll be visiting, and I'll be wishing it was a few weeks later. But, you know, as far as honeymoons go, I think Gamescom would be a highlight for me and not so much for the lady boxer.
You'll have a good time anyway. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's something for her there.
Right. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about this. I mean, I think this wild card thing is a really... it's a really great piece of advertising, isn't it? Because since the very beginning, CD Projekt Red has advertised Gwent as saying, you are the wild card, where it was showing the very, very early advertisements would show regular people dressed up as Witcher characters playing Gwent. And while they've moved on since then and it really, really, really improved their marketing, you are the wild card is still a huge part of their slogan. And so I think that finding someone and making them the wild card at Gamescom is fulfilling a promise and also showcasing the excellence of the game.
Yeah, so good. So, you know, it is poetic in a way. In case you hadn't had a chance to read the rules and regulations, and maybe you're actually hearing this news for the first time on the podcast, in which case it's our pleasure to break this news for you. But, you know, it's standard stuff that you would imagine. You know, there's no card restrictions necessarily. You prepare four different decks from the in-game factions, of course, and there will be bans. It'll be a best of five, three decks, best of five, and it's conquest format, so you must win with all of your decks. If you win with a deck, you cannot play it again. If you lose, you will eventually have to win with it, or you will be eliminated, and it is a single elimination tournament.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking, right? I'm already top seven, McBeard, and I don't know if I can make it to Cologne. That sounds pricey. Don't worry about it, because they will cover your Gamescom admission ticket, travel, and accommodation expenses. CD Projekt Red will pay for you to be there and compete in this tournament. So get ready to compete if you're in the top seven and you're available.
Now, let's be honest, that in itself is a prize, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're top seven, you get to go to Gamescom for free, travel, stay. Like, that is like a vacation. Like, that's like an actual vacation that costs, you know, that costs a lot of money for most people. So, well, it costs the same amount of money for anybody, I guess, but it's a lot of money for most people. So the fact that that's covered, like you're already laughing, you're there, you're having a great time, and then you get to compete for a section of this prize pool. And, you know, it's really great. I hopefully, you know, a lot of people that we know, I would like to, you know, there's a lot of people that I'm rooting for. I want to see them there. But anybody who gets there, my support for sure. I hope there's going to be a lot of great narrative, a lot of great stories. But, you know, of course you're asking that question. I'm in the top seven. What happens? You know, everybody would ask that question because anybody can get there if you're good enough. But the other question you might ask is, what if the game gets updated? What if there's a patch that happens? And this is a really interesting rule that's kind of buried in the FAQ, but what version of the game will the event be using? So in case you didn't know, if there is a significant gameplay update 14 or more days before the tournament itself, which is occurring at Gamescom on August 24th. So if it if an update happens 14 days before then, you're playing on whatever version it is. If the gameplay update for whatever reason happens 14 days after that, the tournament will be played on the last patch, the last gameplay patch, which I'm assuming would be the current patch that we're in at this at the time of this recording. But I hope for, you know, I hope that for the sake of the tournament that it's on the current build. I feel like that's what everybody wants to see, but I think that that's just kind of put there just as a, just cover their bases.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, just go and enjoy yourself. If you make it, it's not to be funny. It's going to be a dog pile to get in. So this is your reward. Getting to Gamescom and competing at the very highest level is your reward. But on top of that, you have a basically a 1 in 8 chance of securing a very, very nice prize pool of money. So at the end of the day, like, you're going to experience the tournament life and to be casted by the likes of Merchant, Mega Mogwai, and McMeard.
Present, McMeard.
Everything has to start with an M. But yeah, so I mean, just, you know, if you want to climb, if you want to make the climb, then buckle down and do it, because this is going to be a great experience. And I think that they're going to really treat you guys pretty well, as they've treated us in the past, as we've been able to go visit with the help of CD Projekt Red.
Yeah, I expect nothing less than a fantastic time. They are great hosts. And this is a great tournament. Grey Boxer, we're not even done with the news yet, because there's another event.
Yeah, it's not the only tournament in town.
It's... So we talked about this event. This is a big one, but it's still there is actually even an additional event that's happening. So this was announced between the last podcast and now, the Gwentleman's Invitational League. This is something else that's huge that is happening, thrown together by the G-Men. Lots of love to them for putting this together. This is huge for the community, and this is going to keep things very interesting for the rest of the summer up until and through and after the Gamescom tournament. There is the Gwentleman's Invitational League, which will be featuring approximately 30 teams. They've been invited. I mean, we're expecting at least, you know, hopefully every team that's invited. Dozens, you know, we're hoping dozens for sure. So this is happening. It starts on July 31st, and the team league is going to be running, you know, it's going to be running matches every week. There's going to be a lot of casters, community casters, new casters that want to break in. I know Mogwai will be involved at one point, as you may have seen on the promotional video that was aired on last Thursday, I believe. It was aired on the Gwentleman Talk Show. You know, and I am also going to be involved at some point as well, although I want to be involved as a player as well. Oh, so, yeah, for sure. So this is a great thing. So there's been lots of teams of three. The games will be played by all three players versus the opposing three players as well. And man, there's a lot to say about this. Grey Boxer, how do you feel about this tournament here that's coming up?
Well, this is the cool thing, right? This has been in the works for a very long time. The Gwentleman's Open was started as sort of the Gwentleman's evolution of the beta brawls, which were the old tournaments that used to run, you know, back in 2016 for the early days of closed beta. And the Gwentleman's Invitational was floated out there as an idea, maybe in conjunction with the Gwentleman's Open, in terms of starting a league. And I don't know if anybody really knows this at the time, but I was in the Gwentleman at this time. And since I went to part-time, I'm not in the Gwentleman anymore. I had to step down. But when we were talking about this, we're trying to make it into a league with championship points. And it seems like these guys have really taken the ideas that they were coming up with at the time and run with them and really evolved them into this really excellent, I think, very prestigious event. And this is going to be something that's continuing. And it is a true invitational. The leader of the Gwentleman has sent out invitations to various teams in order to choose team captains who can build their own teams of three to compete against other teams and, you know, may the best win. I think that they're going to use some pretty excellent formats. As usual with the Gwentleman, they use some of the most competitive formats, and I think they chose one Commander's Horn team captain.
Yes, I was chosen as one of the team captains, and I believe the format is Conquest for all games in this case. They you know, Gwentleman, the TGO has known for, they did a strike format, I believe, last, but they like to keep it fresh. I appreciate that as well. And yeah, it's going to be a Conquest format for, you know, I think that's good for speed of games and ease of understanding for the general public. Generally, Conquest has been probably the most popular format. I feel like it actually dictates It demands a level of skill, a mastery of Gwent overall, multiple decks generally. But anyway, I am team captain for the Commander's Horn team. And the Commander's Horn team is as follows. It's me. I will be playing as well, along with two excellent players, Delta 65 and A-. Listeners of the show may be familiar with these two, as they have both been on the show during the Commando Roundtable events / episodes, and they are both frequently hanging out in my Twitch chat, and we've already started practicing. We practiced on stream today. I practiced with them yesterday as well, and though I love casting tournaments, hopefully I am competing, because it's been a while since I've been out of the tournament scene, but I'm looking to come back in, and I'm really excited about it.
Not to fear, guys. The Commander's Horn team also has Grey Boxer as the team's wartime consigliere, McBeard being, of course, my Vito Corleone. McBeard sends me to make offers that you can't refuse. Savvy? But really, though, like I'll be helping out and kind of subbing in and out and testing with the guys. And I don't have the full-time commitment available to test them as much as these guys want to play test. And you guys are really committed to winning, and I'm really proud of you guys. And if you have any questions about rule sets or anything that a lawyer or a wartime consigliere can help with, I'm your guy.
It's good. It's good to have you as a, I'm trying to think of another mobster term. I can't come up with one. Anyway.
Listen, if I have to, I can start my own bizarro Gwendolyn's Invitational team. We're going to be called the Commando's Horn team. Okay. We're going to have False Gamma and Z Positive on the team. Okay. You've heard of them.
Oh man. Bizarro Commander's Horn. No, it's going to be great. It's going to be great to have you. You know, it's always good to have Grey Boxer in my corner, as he is always in my corner, my bro. So it's going to be good. Well, obviously, we're going to be talking a lot about stuff because, you know, every little bit counts. Yeah, some of the teams have been sort of pseudo-announced, you know, as the people that have been involved. We know that Merchant is teamed up with Trudon and Petrifoy. That's going to be a massive team. You know, another Commando, Shoe Plays, he's going to be teaming up with another great player and tournament winner, Randy of Sintra. And they have another player as well who's very, very good, who I don't believe they've announced. At the time of this recording, I've only heard tell of some of these teams, but yeah. Some of them are stacked, and I can't wait to get the full list of teams. You know, Reddit is getting a team together, Discord's getting a team together, or teams, multiple teams. The French Gwent community is going to be getting a team together as well. Like, it's going to be some regional representation. It's going to be a worldwide event, and it's going to last a long time, and it's going to keep things really exciting for a long time.
Yeah, and if you guys are on the official Gwent Discord server and you are interested in applying to be on one of the two teams that we have available, go ahead and send an application to the mods. Basically, just tell us what your MMR is at, what your win-loss ratio looks like, how long you've been playing Gwent, and a little bit of information about any tournament background you might have. And we know that Shu Plays is the Discord tournament champion, so sad to see that he's been taken by another team. But other champions have been taken by other teams, have started their own teams as well. I believe that the Gwendolyn's Invitational also sent invites to any Gwendolyn's Open champions as well, which includes Vaish and Mago and a number of others.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, all the teams that are coming in to this tournament, I don't think there's a dud among them. I think that every team is going to bring an A game. Every team is going to have a couple of players or all players on the team that are known in the community just by virtue of those being the team captains, but also the selection process that would be involved in vetting, you know, some of the mass, you know, the mass groupings like Reddit or Discord. You know, they're going to get their pick of the cream of the crop as well. And, every game is going to be super interesting, and I think that we're going to see a huge variance in decks. You know, we're going to talk about Dagon in a bit, but in a world where you can ban Dagon anytime you want, or perhaps hate on Dagon, tech against Dagon, you know, I think every match is going to have some surprise factor. It should. I hope it does, because I think that surprise factor is one of the strongest elements in Gwent. And, I mean, again, we could do a whole podcast about this as well, and my excitement for it is really high.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great, and this is something we haven't seen yet, right? Is team-based Gwent. And it was something I got to watch today on stream when you were talking with A-minus about the ranked matches you were playing, and playing cooperatively in Gwent as a part of a team is not something that we've really seen happening very often, let alone in a tournament setting, let alone in what I think is probably the most prestigious tournament short of the Gwent Challenger.
Yep, absolutely. Definitely. It's just a notch below. And obviously CD Projekt Red are going to be the kings there. But for sure, I mean, we've seen, you know, the closest you can say, like, you know, team streaming has ever been has been when Life Coach streamed to Super JJ and whenever he has like a group of people over, like that's the closest. But the fact that it's going to be team versus team, first of all, expect to see a lot of ropes. It's going to be ropes upon ropes because there's a lot of consideration. Even on the stream today, I was streaming with Delta and A-. And even some of the simplest considerations, just, you know, it just, you know, even the, like positioning, you know, what row to put things on when they're agile, when to, you know, sequencing, it's all, you know, everybody has their own play styles, preferences. And of course there are, you know, mathematically correct choices, but not always. And it's very difficult. And I think that especially passing as well. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff like that, that everybody's going to bring their own level of expertise. And I think it's going to come down to which team can play the most perfectly, anticipate the other team, put them on specific cards. The passing is going to be super important, but I don't expect there to be a lot of mistakes because of how much consideration from the level of players that are going to be out there. So just generally, bottom line, this is going to be some of the highest level competitive Gwent you're ever going to see, and we're really excited about it.
That's right. And so, speaking of the highest competitive levels of Gwent, the Gwentlemen have released their newest meta snapshot, and there are three kings, and they're all one king, and they're all one faction, and it's Dagon and McBeard. What do you think?
Dagon, and Dagon. The top three decks you could make.
The top three artists of all time. Dagon, and Dagon.
I'm glad you got that reference, and I hope everybody listening got that reference as well. Dylon.
Dave Chappelle's amazing?
Yeah, Dave Chappelle is amazing. Okay, so the thing about Dagon, and we might as well just transition because, you know, this is news. This meta snapshot definitely made waves in Reddit. I mean, a lot of people tweeted about this. It was jarring, but also not crazy because I know that this meta snapshot had a lot of input from a lot of great players. You know, it's not just one person writing this stuff. Like, this is, and it's not even just the Gwentlemen. Like, there's a community behind the Gwentlemen as well that, you know, always has a lot of, you know, very in-depth discussion about, you know, the meta, what's good, what beats what, and kind of what counters what. And with this many players weighing in and, you know, looking at the meta, and it's still coming out with Dagon on top, it's tough. You have to make these decisions because these tier lists are important to people, and you also want to be honest as well. Dagon is a really strong leader right now, really strong. But I believe he is a benevolent god, Dagon, because his leadership, his dominance is shaping the meta below him. And the meta below him is the meta that I have very much enjoyed, even though Dagon is, you know, very highly represented. So we're talking about this as a news section, but we're also talking about this as strategy because we should talk about Dagon and we should talk about the meta that is existing below Dagon. So let's move into our strategy section and talk about why Dagon is so strong exactly and what it kind of means for Gwent and what it could mean if Dagon didn't exist right after this.
Maybe not today and not tomorrow, but someday, someone will find a way to take you down.
So all hail Dagon. Dagon, our Void... How do you pronounce it? Voidianoi. Our Voidianoi overlord. We welcome our new Voidianoi overlords. Dagon, be it mid-range tokens or weather, it is considered by a lot of players as the best leader that you can play, and all variations. Dagon has so many ways to win, which is why he is kind of, I won't say dominating. I don't think we can say dominating. And I think that it's worth noting some of the stuff that has been said on Reddit about Dagon and how even though that he's one of the, you know, sorry, even though he is the strongest leader in the opinion poll, it's important to note that just because he's the strongest doesn't mean that every other deck sucks or every other deck can't compete at all. Lamios made a really good response. Lamios, one of the members of the Gwentlemen, a great player as well, and he's made a number of great videos. We talked about that in some previous episodes, but there was a post made by Gorilla Joe on Reddit. New meta snapshot, every tier one is Dagon, you know, and there was a lot of, you know, there's some jokes to be made about that. It's Reddit, of course, there are some memes, but Lamios made a very considerate post just emphasizing that Quote, although Dagon is very strong and it was placed within a solo tier 1, it does not mean you have to play Dagon to climb or to even have a chance. The meta is very diverse at this point in time, and the gap between decks isn't as large as it was in the past, even though there is a clear division between Dagon and everything else. So how do you feel about that statement? Let's start there. Let's start with that statement.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a happy little Voidenoi acolyte living under the imperious rule of our Lord and Savior Dagon, but the thing is you're right, and so is Lemios. There's a meta that is, you know, counterable. I mean, Clearweathers really help you solve the Dagon issue, right? And that's fine. It's going to slightly affect deck building. That's also fine. But the point is, there's a lot of fun to be had in all levels of Gwent right now, from 1,000 MMR to above 4,000, because Dagon doesn't dominate you. He's simply good. He's simply strong value, and mathematically, he puts the most points on the board while reducing your opponent's win conditions and keeps some decent carryover. So in all of these different variations, every single one of these decks is running Foglets McBeard. There's no question as to whether or not he's spawning Fog the most and playing Foglets the most. But the problem that I have with this is that it's not a bad thing. It's just what works. Like, you're not going to play Rain with Dagon every time because Rain's not going to give you the most value. You don't get Rainlets, you know. You don't have Frostlets. You have Foglets. So that's what you use. They're your little Voidenoi worshippers, right? So that's what the decks are all looking like, and you can build basically almost any shell of a strong monster deck around these two principles of having Fog and Foglets with Dagon is going to be strong because it's efficient and it's deck thinning and it's carryover. It's all the best parts about Gwent wrapped up in a package that is much, much less oppressive than 20 strength Morkvargs and 25 strength Clambrockfar Hunters.
Yeah, that's a really important point that you made there, because we're talking about, I mean, I'm talking about how, you know, it's exciting right now. It's great. The meta is good, even though Dagon is, you know, a clear league of his own. But this is much better than the Skellige meta that preceded it, in which Bran and Axeman and Croc on Crate with Morkvarg and all of the different permutations of Skellige was much more stifling what you could play. And, you know, the same, you know. And we were talking about this before we started recording, Grey Boxer. You said it was just not fun to play against the same win conditions each time. The thing about Dagon is, while the core of Dagon in most cases is very much the same, you're going to see Foggets, you're going to see Harpies. These days, you're going to see Thunderbolt Potions. You're going to see Earth Elementals in a lot of cases. Most cases, you're going to see Earth Elementals. So those, you're going to see those a lot. But the way each Dagon deck plays out, it's tough to not know exactly what Dagon you're playing against, because, you know, it affects your mulligan, it affects your strategy, but you know that you're going to see roughly the same thing round one. And, you know, ultimately, until that Necro Warrior comes out to replicate Foglets, or until you see Triss Butterfly Spell, or until you see the Crones, or you don't see the Crones, or you count the Silvers, you're not quite sure. It makes the games a bit more dynamic and interesting, even though Dagon is seen a lot. It's a lot more dynamic than seeing Morkvarg turn one every single game. Every single game, I was so sick of seeing Morkvarg and hearing his voice lines, believe me. You're hearing a lot of screeches and slavering and growling, that's for sure. But, you know, but the thing about Foglets, sorry not to just carry over into the next piece, but the thing about
I get it.
Carry over, very good. the thing about that is, you know, when you compare a deck like Morvran, who is also a six strength leader that will spawn golems and then have his effect, Dagon does something very similar in that it's a six strength card that is spawning a grouping of two strength units and then producing weather, which is more value, much like Darlan Foot Soldiers might be. Dagon has so many ways to win and so many ways to build the deck on top of that power package. Morvran was restricted to not a gimmicky deck. Reveal is not so much gimmicky. It was strong for a while. It's not considered even tier 2, I believe, as far as, you know, the Gwendolyn snapshot is concerned. But, you know, there was a lot of strength in Morvran just by virtue of the fact that you had this incredibly strong tempo play. Dagon has that tempo play, but also has all of the great, great cards and great variations that monsters have. And so many win conditions. And, you know, their silvers are so good. When we talked about monsters 2 episodes ago, we talked about how, like, there isn't a bad gold in the bunch, really, especially when you compare actual bad golds. So it's, you know, there's just so much going for monsters right now.
Yeah, and it's like you can build almost anything you want, and that's why there's like what, 6 strong Dagon decks out there, and they're all gonna fall sort of into different levels, right? There's a mid range variant, there's a swingy variant that Crokies has done that I really like as the Timmy style player with Geralt Igni, a ton of extra Thunderbolt potions and Water Hag and Crones, and you know, I think that it's still not a bad thing to have Dagon on the top. And I think that what makes him strong is just the consistency, right? Is it so predictable, kind of like Croc getting out Morkvarg was, is that you know Dagon's going to get your Foggits out. You know you have other sources for Fog as well. And Fog is decent control. It's not overpowered. It's 2 points per turn for the row. It's counterable by clear weather. Your Foglets die if you clear the weather. Like, there's a lot of counters to it. So I feel like it's never been oppressive, as we mentioned before. Because it is so counterable. And I think that it's just really amazing to see what deck building has evolved around Dagon. And I wonder, like, you make the Morvran comparison. Morvran just doesn't have, like, the deck efficiency unless you just really get into those Dareland foot soldiers. But it could be as strong as Dagon with a couple of tweaks. And, you know, I think that a lot of factions have this sort of core, right? Where there's some cards that just work so well, some bronzes that are so good for the deck that you have to have them in most of the decks. And you think about, you know, your Kedwenny Sergeants, right? In Northern Realms. Like, you can play those in a lot of decks and they're really strong. And I've seen Radovid Control using those, by the way, and it's pretty fun. And, you know, you have, you know, your Skellige's always going to have Priestesses unless you're insane. Or now it always has Ankrate Raiders, right? Strong bronzes that always enable and help your win conditions. And so you can sort of build different sorts of decks around them as long as they have the supporting pieces. Monsters does that the best right now.
And the thing of the CD Projekt Red has always been pretty clear that they don't want, you know, sorry to make the comparison here, but there are games, you know, there's games like Hearthstone, and I haven't played very many others lately, but games like Hearthstone with a lot of random effects and things changing into other things and groupings of mana costs, and there is a reason to have bad cards in games like Hearthstone where generally CD Projekt Red doesn't really have any need for bad cards in the game. So they walk a very fine line. They want all of the cards to be good, have use, be playable. They don't want just to have a card that's just outshadowed by everything else. So that's why a lot of cards get buffed and we see a lot of balance tweaks, but they also don't necessarily want any cards to be auto-include. And right now we're seeing that from cards like Foglet and Dagon. Dagon's running Foglets. End of story. Most cases, all cases, 99% of the cases, you're seeing Harpies too. And now we're seeing Thunderbolt in a lot of lists. Earth Elemental is making a huge appearance. I feel like Earth Elemental was indie at one point, but now you're seeing it in a lot of lists. And then there's cards like Woodland Spirit, which are just crazy. That card is so strong right now with the way that you can build Foglet. You know, if you're doing a Foglet army type build with Necker Warriors, so when you play Fog, you can have up to 9 Foglets come out if you hit all 3 Necker Warriors. Is that right? That's the math?
Yeah. So you have 3 normally, and then you can hit all 3 and add, it'd be 7. Hmm. No, it'd be 9, like you said. Yeah, math hard.
Yeah. Now, I haven't seen a lot of decks that run 3 Warriors, but I've seen many that run 2. So yeah, you get 7 Foglets. So if you don't have a clear, you don't have a, you know, Doblethana Trapper, or perhaps, you know, a well-played cow carcass or a lacerate of your own, you are going to get overrun. And in decks like that, you can run Triss Butterfly Spell, which is also a nutty card. In a lot of these builds, you know, Fire Elemental, Woodland Spirit, Harpies, they're all producing all many, like a swarm of little units that all benefit from Triss Butterfly Spell, you know, 3, 4, 5 points a turn passively. If you can't deal with it, you're done. And, you know, and Renew for these cards, that makes total sense. Renew on Woodland Spirit makes total sense just because you get the extra fog effect. It means you get your Foglets again. It means you get Woodland Spirit twice in a game, which is so good. So, you know, there's a lot of decks comparatively, other factions, just they don't have plays like this in every game that they can play. But the thing is, you can plan around it. You can plan around it a bit more. It's very predictable. But because Dagon has so many ways that are very hard to disrupt, even if you have the counters, it doesn't assure your win. But you can at least improve your win rate against Dagon. And that's important because you're probably seeing a large representation of Dagon. But, you know, do you... How do you feel about weather clears in general?
Yeah, so there's a lot of decks are still able to compete with Dagon, right? It's not that oppressive. However, it does demand some sort of deck hindering techs, in my opinion. And I know McBeard and I are a little bit at odds with this because I think that that Dagon's presence at the top of the ladder and his power there is necessitating some changes. And I think that maybe it's because we know some of the weaknesses of the Dagon deck. If you have a Foggit army, and your final card, one of the two final cards that you have for round three, if you're able to save two, if one of those is a Weatherclear, then you're in pretty solid condition, provided you have that card advantage. And so you might be changing the way, not only building your deck, adding more Weatherclears, but you might be changing the way you play at all. Whereas a lot of times when you play and you're saving up for round three, what you're saving up are your giant swing cards, your big power plays and everything. But seldom are you going to save just a Weatherclear. But if you got a Dagon player against you who you think might even have a Thunderbolt or a Commander's Horn with his Woodland Spirit, I mean, you're going to want to save a Weatherclear, right? So that's changed, right? Griffins are coming back. These are an 8-strength bronze that steals a card from your opponent's graveyard. Well, if you're playing Dagon Mirrors all the time and you play Foglets and you could use an 8-strength bronze to steal somebody else's Foglet and then summon it yourself. What's more disruptive than that?
I feel like that's a real mirror tech too. You get more Foglets as Dagon against Dagon, perhaps. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do. And I think that this is one of the reasons, not the only reason, that Ethna is actually a really good matchup with Dagon. I mean, it's Dagon is still very, very good. Again, this is a League of His Own type of situation, but because Ethna can be held until the end, and you're probably running, if you're running mercenaries, elven mercenaries and first lights for, you know, thinning your deck and rallying out other bronze units, at least you know that if you're holding on to Ethna until the end and you are able to get a card up, which with Squirtle is, you have a decent chance of doing it. What with Yavin and with some of the tempo swings that you can have with a control Squirtle, you can get that clear on Ethna as well. And it doesn't actually sacrifice the rallying effects that are helping you thin your deck and play cards like Siri Dash, or just try to thin out so you get a strong gold core so you can scorch the hell out of the board. And, you know, it seems so simple, though. Just get card advantage on monsters. But that's all part of why monsters are very strong. Not just Dagon, but monsters, because their carryover is very strong as well. If getting card advantage was an easy thing, no one would ever complain about Gravehag, really. No one really would complain about Dagon and the way that their weather effect is such a huge swing on top of, you know, what they can do with Dagon himself, Woodland Spirit. So getting card advantage on Dagon is really important. It, you know, if you get caught on a bad long round and they have Triss Butterfly spell out, you might just be in trouble anyway. And because of all the ways that they can make little swarmy units like the wolves, the, you know, the carryover units, the tiny earth elementals, harpies, harpy eggs, and of course the fire elemental as well, getting a Commander's Horn target for Dagon is really easy. And as it turns out, Commander's Horn's pretty good when you can connect 5 points. You know, Commander's Horn's always been good when you can get the full value out of it. It's been, always been one of the strongest silvers, but, you know, it's always been hindered by the fact that you need 5 targets. For Dagon, no problem. So Commander's Horn is everywhere. You want to make sure that you see Commander's Horn in the match, and you can never count it out as a way you can lose. But the more you play against Dagon and the more a meta evolves, the more techs come out and the more new strategies are evolved to compete against Dagon. But this meta is getting pretty settled right now, and Dagon's kind of standing out as just being a really strong leader. So what does that mean? What does that mean for a future patch? When we see tweaks to Dagon, if we had to anticipate a tweak to Dagon, you know, what would we think? You know, are you changing Foglets themselves? Are you changing how they interact? You know, or do they only come out the one time, like how Roach was changed? Do they change Dagon's strength level? Is that enough to actually bring it down? Like, where's the real problem with Dagon? And, you know, how do you think that they might tweak this deck to change things?
You know, if I was a cynic, I would say, yeah, they're just going to bump Dagon down to 4, and Dagon will be a 4-strength leader now, like a number of other leaders who are really powerful, like Bran, right? Mm. I have a hard time with Foglets. Not because I think they're overpowered, but they're so clearly the auto-include win condition for the Tier 1 deck, as chosen by the best players in Gwent. It's really hard to ignore it, right? And it's so hard to ignore because the rest of the monsters cards provide these decks with effortless carryover. And we're talking the Harpy Eggs and, as you mentioned, the mini Earth Elementals and Foggets themselves are easy carryover. You just put them in your deck and get them out with a Fog. get him out again with a fog. And it's simply, it's carryover, especially if you're spawning extra ones. So what do I think they could do? I think that they can make foglets a 3 and only come out once.
Oh man, I still think that would be really strong though. I mean, look at how golems are. Golems got nerfed from 3 because of, I mean, Calvet was different then. Calvet was like super strong. He pulled gold cards. He was, but he had a stronger body as well. I think that's a good suggestion. I personally think that that would be too strong. Even still, that would be too strong.
Well, compare with Calvet, right? Because Calvet would get out the, Calvet was 5 strength on his own, and then 3 golems was 9. So he was already at 14 coming down. Plus, if he pulled a gold card that was worth, you know, 10 or 15 points even, or even just a, some of their bronzes in a deep round will get that high. You could see the kind of swing that you'd have, or you could even just pull out Siri, and that was what was happening. You play a 19-point Siri turn 1, and that's a problem. Dagon doesn't have that. Dagon doesn't spawn anything, doesn't pull a card from your deck except for the foglets, and all he does is spawn a 2 damage per turn ticking effect on your opponent's side, so he doesn't have that swing of Calvet. So it would be sort of a foglets are going to help you thin your deck and win round 1, sort of similar to Temerian Foot Soldiers, sort of similar to Blue Mountain Commandos, and they're going to be 3 to keep them in line with that. You play a fog to thin them out, which is why there are 3. They provide additional deck thinning. You don't have to hold one in your hand. They're not a muster. So I think that there's an argument to be made for using them like that. And I only say that because I'm not a card designer, McBeard. I don't work for CD Projekt Red. I'm not going to pretend that I have the skill to design a card. I'm not a Monday morning quarterback with designing Gwent cards because I think something's broken. I think foglets are pretty much okay, but maybe the win condition, being that they're reused over and over again, could go away and the game would still be balanced. And we wouldn't see foglets in every single monster's deck that exists.
Yeah, I still think Dagon will always be playing Fog, and I think that if Foglets are always going to come out with Fog, Dagon's going to roughly stay the same. So I think even if you were to change Foglets in some way, I still think Dagon would take a hit on the body, because I think that 6 is, you know, as strong as a leader gets, and Dagon's already the strongest leader because of all the things that come along with Dagon. And that Fog is not nothing as well. I think that that's also really strong. And also, we were talking about the carryover. One of the reasons why it's difficult to get a card, you know, getting card advantage on Dagon is harder, or monsters in general, harder than other factions, because, you know, because they have usually something on the board is carryover in round 2. You can't do the dry pass, or also known as a cold pass, or an open pass, I suppose. Everybody has their own, depending on what side of the tracks you're on, I suppose. But you can't just win, even if you win the round, you can't get that extra boost, that, you know, that reward for winning that first round. By making your opponent go first and having that opportunity, if you were to go down a card to do so, sometimes it's worth it because you can go into round 2. Maybe it's a short round. Maybe you're okay passing. Forcing your opponent to play a card and then go first in round 3 is very powerful. Generally, it's not going to happen if you're playing against Dagon. And unless you have an opportunity to pass on Dagon, or sorry, win against Dagon, in a situation where he has no carryover, which is rare. It happens, but it's rare. Only then might you be able to really close the deal in round 3. But generally, it doesn't happen like that. And if anything, you're going to get a turn advantage on even cards. So, and that's sometimes enough. For some decks, that's enough. And I think for the decks that are truly going to compete against Dagon, that is what you're looking to do. So it's just, there's, like we said at the top, and like it said in the meta snapshot, Dagon has a lot of ways to win. Very hard to disrupt. Monsters have a lot of great cards in general. How do you nerf Dagon without hurting monsters overall? Like right now, I feel like playing monsters isn't so bad as playing Dagon. Like Aridin is hipster right now. Like I think that's that's funny, but it's still monsters, and they're still so good for all the same reasons. And you're still running Harpies, and you're still running Thunderbolts and Aridin. So it's like, you know, where are we clearly identifying the problems? Because while not a lot of people are arguing that Dagon's good, I don't want to see Dagon get quadruple nerfed. Like I don't want to see the deck get obliterated in the patch. Like I think that baby steps are more important now in a world where Dagon's on top, but the bedrock beneath him is rich with nutrients. I don't know, bedrock doesn't have nutrients. I don't know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean. So like, imagine Dagon was to disappear tomorrow. What would that do? Like, what would be the top deck? I mean, that's really hard. That's really hard to predict generally. And we're talking about Dagon. Like, let's say Dagon was banned, like for a hypothetical argument. Like, personally, I think Radovid would, like, Radovid is thriving, especially some of the control or weather Radovid lists that run Baron. Generally, that's where you're seeing Radovid right now. He's thriving right now because there's a lot of units to remove. You can get Baron up really high, you know, playing a lot of these weather effects with Radovid, or a lot of these removal effects are very potent against Dagon, as well as control Ethna. Kind of the matchup with Dagon is decent as well. I still think Ethna might be good. I think Radovid might go down a bit in power. Maybe Ethna would go up a bit in power, but I don't know. What do you think about it?
Well, I mean, the easy answer is to say, well, take a look at tier 2 in the Gwendolyn meta snapshot, and those would be the strongest decks. And those decks already do exist in the Dagon apocalyptic reality, but maybe in a post-Dagon world, I think you'd see multiple tier 1 factions and not just Dagon, Dagon, Dagon. I think we'd see some other cool decks. Like, I think we'd see Queensguard up there. I think we'd see a version of the spammy full test. I think that Nilfgaard Cow Control would be up there if you want to run your Raw Tossers, probably with Calvet and the aforementioned Golems. I think that to top them all off, Consume would be the strongest deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting when we're talking about the snapshot that there are 3 additional monster decks in the tier 2, Consume Monsters, Aridon Weather, and Hybrid Consume. So I think that, and just for posterity, just in case you're not looking at it right now, of course we will provide a link in the show notes, but the tier 2 decks, there are 9 in that league below Dagon Weather, Dagon Tokens, and Dagon Midrange, and those decks are Consume Monsters, Control Scoia'tael, which we talked about, Dwarf Scoia'tael, Aridon Weather, Midrange Full Test, which is, I believe, the 27 card deck, like that core, that concept that you've been very fond of lately, Gray Boxer. Hybrid Consume, Queensguard, which you think is a cool deck. I disagree. I do not like Queensguard. I think it's too potent in all 3 rounds. It's really like you have to really push the crap out of Queensguard. Maybe I'm alone. Maybe my opinion is a bad opinion, but I have a problem with Queensguard personally. And then, of course, Radovid Control and Radovid Weather currently. But also, I think that Radovid's decks, based on their matchup against Dagon, is why they're positioned there. And then it continues on with a large grouping of decks for Tier 3 and Tier 4. Really not very many stones unturned. Like, almost every deck is talked about, with the exception of maybe an armor-based Northern Realms deck. Mm. There's not really anything else on this list that is not present in Gwent, from any stretch of the imagination, what you could actually build with any bronze card. So everything is in here, with that one exception of an armor-based build, which I think could maybe be slotted into Tier 3 or 4 personally, but I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, maybe you could start your True King Henselt trend, right? Like back in the day with Aridon, you popularized a very, very, I think, polarizing archetype of decks and back in the old Scoia'tael meta, where they'd weather you to death. You just played a weather immune units and just buffed them the crap up, and they would stay on with the old monsters passive and so forth, and that was fun. Well, maybe you can do something with King Henselt and make him at least appear on the meta snapshot, McBeard.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually Henselt has a decent Dagon matchup, and I think that I wouldn't say it's one-sided, but with Redanian Knights and immune boosts and other weather immune, like weather combat things, you can do a lot with an armor-based Henselt deck, and I've been trying to refine the list all the time. We talked about getting to 4K and how you hit a wall and how the competitive game changes a bit. You can climb to 4K, even in the afterglow of this Dagon, Dagon, Dagon tier list, up until 4K, climbing generally, you really can climb with anything. Not just because you don't lose a lot of MMR and you gain a lot, especially going up to about 35-ish, 37-ish, 3700 or so MMR, but I think that a deck like Henselt, I mean, I played it definitely on the way to 4K in the higher 3000s, so you know, and a lot of it had to do with the monsters matchup, so it's decent, and I'll provide a link to that. I think I provided a link in the last podcast, but I'll do it again, because I like showing the deck off, but I have found that in 4K it definitely contributes to my 4K float for sure. But Ethna has been a breakthrough deck for me. I think that that's, you know, the deck that's going to help me climb because it has a better matchup than Henselt, I think, against Dagon. And in general, a lot of these tier two decks as well. Squirtle Control, I believe it's highlighted here for the most part. So where does that put us right now? I think that generally, overall, even with this clear division, personally, I'm happy with the meta. How do you feel about the meta?
Yeah, it's really fun, and we're playing, you know, like we're hovering around 4K. McBeard above it, me slightly below it, and I haven't put enough time in to get up above, but I climb quite a lot, and I saw a lot of things on the way up, and you can do the very same thing. You can play almost anything you want, and if you play it well, you will hit 4,000 MMR. It's going to happen. It's almost an inevitable fact. So go ahead and play whatever you like playing. That's what I've been doing. I've really enjoyed my tier 2 decks. I've really enjoyed Northern Realms. I've really enjoyed Queen's Guards. And I haven't touched Dagon on the way up and never had a hard time rocking like 75-ish percent win rates with the decks. And you know what? You can do the same thing. And always take our advice when we say play what you like, because you don't want to get burned out. And even though Gwent's really fun right now, like it could be a grind if you're having a hard time. So if you're having a hard time with Dagon, we talked about it a little bit earlier, you know, tech in some weather, you know, tech in, if you're facing the mirrors, you know, you're playing Dagon, tech in a couple Griffins and see what happens. You know, there's a couple of things you can really do, some tricks you can have to win. And otherwise, like we said, on the way up, it's all fun. It's all gravy, baby.
Absolutely. Yeah, we don't want to undermine. I'm getting to 4K. That last leg of rank 18 is it can be tough. It can be tough, but we don't want to undermine. Getting to 4K is an achievement, but you know it's more of a commitment of time than it is than anything. I think like I feel like with play comes experience, and generally, if you're playing a deck that's working for you, you should be able to get there. But you know, it is going to take effort. I think around rank 18. That's when the clamping effect, that's when, you know, wins and losses start to even out a little bit. And definitely at 4K, not only are you coming up against a very, very, it's a bottleneck right now up at 4K right now. And the competition is harder, and the MMR gains are definitely much more tame than it is on the way up. But yeah, definitely put in your best effort. And good luck to everybody that's trying to climb. And take a look at the meta snapshot. There's a lot of decks to choose from that you may find to be your new favorite deck. Yeah, and good luck to you on the climb. Let's wrap this up with some feedback and some emails from the community. And yeah, we'll see you on the other side of that. Once again, my friends, we are supported by our commandos, our Patreons at patreon.com/commandershorn. This week, we would like to thank our newest commando.
Commando!
Travis K., thanks so much for supporting our content. As we said at the top of the show, you are helping keep the podcast ad-free, keeping us coming back week after week to proudly represent the community with the best content we can produce. Speaking of the community, we had some feedback on the last episode. Gum Gum Face Punch was talking to us in our Discord. He enjoyed some things. He enjoyed your lore, Gray Boxer. He enjoyed hearing about some of the history of the card. So we're going to try to do a little bit more of that, aren't we, Gray Boxer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm into that, as you well know.
Yeah, you're a lore junkie. And we love The Witcher. We love the stories in The Witcher. So we'll try to mix in as much of that. I mean, today was really very a newsy podcast, but, you know, we'll try to keep that section in there. Maybe we'll do emails one week, and maybe we'll do some stories behind the cards, you know. Gwent Folktales has to continue in some form or another. So, you know, we always want to hear Grey Boxer. We like to hear your knowledge, wise Greybeard.
McBeard, it sounds like you're trying to get on Gwent Folktales. We might have an opening.
Oh yeah, well, you know I'm a fan. You know I'm a fan of your work. But Gumbum Facebook also had a follow up on the. So we had our episode about spies, and we talked about a lot of stuff. We covered a lot of ground. But there's a couple of things that we neglected to mention that were really good points that Gumbum brought up. So one of the things that he talked about was that we didn't mention a piece of Frightener synergy that is really one of the best parts about running Frightener is that when you pull Frightener with Gels, Gallus is a gold card, two strength, that shows you a silver and a gold card in your deck that you haven't drawn yet. And if one of those cards is Frightener, when you play Frightener, you are assured to draw the gold that Gallus showed you. So that's one of the best synergies that you can get with Frightener, with Gallus in your deck. Running Gallus and Frightener is usually what you want to do. And, you know, you see Frightener, and then you see Caranthir. You play Gallus, you get Frightener on, and then you know you're going to draw Caranthir, which is really strong. So when your Spy is going to draw you a real nuts card like that, it's good.
Well, I think that that's almost a better advertisement of Gallus, to be honest. If Gallus is pulling a gold to the top, then that's incredible. And that's great knowledge to have. And I'd like to go to the Gwent labs and test that out. Like, maybe not even, what if I don't pull the Frightener with Gallus? What if I have Gallus in hand and I play Gallus and I draw some other silver, I draw Water Hag, but it shows me Igni, right? Then do I play Frightener and draw Igni?
Yeah, I mean, if you play Water Hag, you're talking about having Frightener in hand as well. So yeah. You put Igni on top of your deck, and now Frightener is an instant Igni whenever you need it. Well,
that's just incredible. I'm not sure that everybody knows about that. Gallus is moving the gold to the top of your deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons why Gallus is so good. Not only because he's showing you two, you know, high value cards generally, but the fact that you're going to draw both of them if it's not round three, for sure. Gallus is a good card. Very good card with Frightener as well. And then the second point is, we talked a lot about Cantarella, but we didn't really talk about Rainfarn, which has a great synergy with Disloyal cards in general. Rainfarn, basically, if you play Rainfarn with Cantarella, you're lowering the risk of Cantarella. And if you're running Roach as well, you're really lowering it. In a lot of cases, especially when Rainfarn was a little stronger than he was, he almost reversed the coin flip. And a lot of times you could play him in round one, but he's still very good. Playing, you know, it's part of the synergy. We talked about how Cantarella didn't really have the same level of synergy because of what she does, puts the card to the bottom of the deck. You know, there's not a lot of ways you can take advantage of that, but there are a lot of ways you can take advantage of having Cantarella as a disloyal card in a faction that plays a lot of synergy with disloyal cards, and Rainfarn is one of those cards. So, you know, if you're playing, you know, and also Elzer's Double Cross, guaranteed spies in general. That's a general concept of spies, Elzer's Double Cross. If you want to play your spies all the time, it's another way to ensure that you're going to be able to play it every game. So there's just a couple of really good points that Gum brought up that we just wanted to give credit to that.
Well, yeah, because Rainfarn and Roach makes Cantarella a 0-point spy, which is something we talk about. Fabled tales of Gwent lore of old is when, you know, in the early closed beta days, you could play 0-point spies or 1-point spies into weather. And if you're wondering, there is no like lore interaction with Rainfarn and Cantarella. They never met, as far as I can tell. Rainfarn is actually the guy who stabbed Urchion in the back, the guy who ended up becoming Ciri's father. So I don't know. It doesn't really seem to fit with the Cantarella with me, but he's a real jerk, that Rainfarn.
He is a literal backstabbing piece of crap. And he's very sad. I think Mogwai runs Rainfarn in his deck, and he calls the deck "I cry every time" because Rainfarn seems like he's crying all the time. He's just looking so forlorn. Well, that's because you're a dirty backstabbing son of a bee.
Is he
addicted to Fistech as well? Oh, we're getting a little war right now.
Yeah, you mentioned it. And so, yeah, he shows up in Blood of Wine, like at the tournament, and someone's talking some crap on him, and he apparently uses Fistech. And probably a user relying on the drugs after a very shabby past in which he was stabbing people in the back at dinner parties.
That Fistech. Oh, it's a hell of a drug. And now DG Thunder also wrote to us, and he also talked about spies as well, but he has a different take on this. And I love this. I love this, this email that he sent us, DG Thunder, a friend of the show. I've enjoyed your podcast about spies. I was wondering if you think there's room to have more than one spy per faction. And he goes on to talk about an idea of a slot that would be dedicated to a disloyal card drawing, quote unquote, spy, as we call them. And it really kind of opened up my imagination as to other situations, like, because, you know, Gwent is a game where you have four gold slots, six silver slots, deck restrictions, but it also makes decision making really important. What if there was another level of decision making where there is a type of card that you can only have one of specifically? Like, imagine like you can only have one Geralt in your deck and you had to choose between the Geralts or something like that. You know, having, or maybe only one Ciri or something like that. What if there were multiple units that, you know, it would be crazy to run maybe two card advantage spies, or maybe it wouldn't be so crazy because they are risky cards. But what if there was a slot dedicated to a specific type of card, and then there were different variations of that card that could be balanced in a way that you know you wouldn't be able to run both of those kinds of cards, much in a way that the gold cards are balanced in that you know you only have four of those kinds of cards. Do you have any thoughts on that type of thing?
So I feel like this sort of idea, which is really interesting, is sort of already in place. If we're talking about having like a slot for a spy, well, we only do have one spy per faction, and yeah, new cards are going to come. Here's what's going to happen is you're right. There's going to be more spies. There's going to be more disloyals. Disloyal silvers, probably maybe a disloyal gold here or there, maybe even a card advantage disloyal gold. And will Gwent make it so you can only have one disloyal card? And disloyal card advantage card being a spy. I don't know. I don't know if they would be able to balance that, but I think that DG Thunder is onto something where he knows we're going to have 500 cards by the end of the year, and we're going to have more than just Cantarella in Nilfgaard as a card drawing disloyal. So maybe there will be like an extra slot for a disloyal that you either can use or not use. But yeah, it could be a problem with like multiple, you know, like if you're able to somehow put together a victory in round one, holding two disloyal spies, then play Ciri too, you know, like you can get a ton of card advantage, but, a lot of decks generate tons of card advantage, but don't get a lot for it. And that's, you know, card like mill Nilfgaard is one of those where they can mill you to death, but then they still lose. So it's a tier four deck. It's pretty bad. I think that having multiple spies per faction or multiple cards of any type like that per faction isn't a bad thing. Having two series, not a bad thing. Having two Geralts, not a bad thing. So I don't know if we need a slot like that, because I don't think that spies are that overpowered.
Yeah, and I think that by virtue, like, I think the idea of having multiple disloyal card advantage spy cards like that would mean that you would have more archetypes that could take advantage of a card like that. Like, specifically, like we were talking about, Ulduric benefits from discarding, also benefits from graveyard play because you're discarding that card into the graveyard. And, you know, it meets the needs of Skellige as a faction. But if you're looking to find a spy that would need synergy with, you know, maybe a leader that hasn't been created yet or an archetype that hasn't been created yet, like maybe there's a spy for Squirtle that caters more to Mulligan as opposed to, you know, kind of how Yavin caters to a spell deck and that he always shows you a special card. You know, if they made more spies that cater to different archetypes, you generally would choose one spy over the other because it would be more efficient. And then if you added a slot, it would be maybe more restrictive, but definitely a good point. There's many, many more cards coming, and we're going to see a lot of different things for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you could have, for Skellige, you could have a different spy that damages opposing units, you know, that helps a little bit with the wounding archetype, or I don't know, you can have one that, I mean, really, what, that wounds one of your own units by one? I mean, like that's kind of pushing it, right? Like, Ulduric's really the best they're going to get, aside from damaging adjacents, which you've already dealt with once with Yavin, and I'm not sure I want to ever see again.
Yeah, and then one other thing about card restrictions I want to talk about before we wrap things up here is that I feel like if you were to add a card restriction, like you can only have one spy in your deck, I feel like just kind of from a new player perspective, you might have to think that you have to include one because you're not making use of that slot. So I feel like that's not the best message to send, because I feel like spies are a risky choice that, you know, there is a decision to be made to even include one in your deck at all, because silvers can be very competitive sometimes, and not all factions, you know, are always looking at a spy as an auto include. Some are, some types, some decks are, but generally I feel like just, you know, when I always feel like you have to, or you're feeling you're not taking advantage of something that's been outlined as too powerful to have two, you should probably have one. So that's just my last thought on that. So we'll wrap this up here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You can follow us on Twitter for all updates on the show, at Commander's Horn, and email us, like DG Thunderer did, at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. Grey Boxer, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on the Twitter at GreyBoxerGwent. You can find me as GreyBoxer on YouTube and also GreyBoxer on Twitch. And I just want to remind you guys, stay in touch with the show because we're going to be keeping you guys updated about the Gamescom tournament as well as anything to do with the Commander's Horn team with the TGI as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking forward to, you know, always giving you an update on how the Commander's Horn team is going with Delta 65 and A-. And, you know, we're doing some scrims as well. Just today we did that on my Twitch. I can be found at McBearded on Twitch. And of course, I'll be giving my updates as well on McBeardCH on Twitter and posting videos on YouTube at McBeard. But there's a lot of news coming up. You know, I'll be traveling. I'll be talking to people as well. I'll try to get some great interviews here and there. There's lots of stuff coming up, lots of other stuff that's going to be announced. And, you know, we're always working on making really exciting content for you. And I feel like the best is yet to come. So thanks for joining us today as we see the shape of Gwent to come, you know, with these great events coming up. And yeah, we really appreciate you joining us week after week.
Until next time, this is Grey Boxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck
on the path.